always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And so I just don't, you know, he's never had the place where it's not like you're someone that we have invested in. It's never been, you have to prove to us that you can do these things, not like, you know, you have this view of yourself and whatever. And I wonder if that's part of it too. Like, remember, very different players and very different stages of their career. But when Dwight Howard basically got the cold shoulder from the entire NBA in the 2019 offseason and sort of had to go to the Lakers like hat in hand and be like, no, I'll play for a non-guaranteed. Like, you let me on the team. I will prove to you that I can contribute to winning. And I wonder if that is sort of a factor here for the Lakers as well, in like hoping that you get sort of that version of Jonathan Kuminga, where it's like, I'm hungry and I just want to do what I can to contribute to winning.
Yeah, I've compared it to Cam Reddish, but I actually think Dwight Howard is a pretty good comp here too, in that, like, because Kuminga has done stuff. Like, Reddish at no point in his career was anywhere near as good as at basketball as Jonathan Kuminga is right
Maybe
now.
In high school. I guess that's when sort of Kuminga was damning by faint praise. Yeah, I guess that's kind of damning by faint praise, but he was like, I think it was like the number one high school player.
He was,
you know, it's like once he got to a level of basketball where there were a lot of guys as athletic as him, he was just kind of useless. But he was, you know, he did have some level of.
Yeah, I find myself wondering, I don't think Kuminga, like, there's such a crazy hot market for him that the Lakers feel any desperation to do anything right now. And I think they would like for them, like, they would like to be able to open up some money. But I also think that if they're going to include second round draft capital, which is, I think they only have the three for second rounders that they know. How many second rounders? They got two for Ayton.
I think
right?
It's just the two, right? I don't think they have another one.
And I think they have another second rounder somewhere, stashed away somewhere, and then they have a pick swap that they can offer. But if the Lakers, I think if they're going to, and we know this about Rob, because we have literally never seen him do this, which is just dump a player and assets for the sake of getting rid of the contract. He has never done that before.
Which is weird for a guy that values cap space so much.
Harrison.
He only values if it's in one big glob and you get to play fantasy GM for an offseason.
Yeah, like can we talk about the cap space plan here? And like what I thought should have been a very like clear issue with it right from the get-go. And it was that, like, it's one thing to have the cap space plan if you aren't good in the years or the run-up to the summer that you're going to have all of that cap space, because in that instance, you're probably saying goodbye to guys who, like, you're fine saying goodbye to without getting anything in return. But think about, like, all of the players that the Lakers have lost this summer who were useful. Like, they literally lost the starting five of a team that won a first round playoff series, you know? Yeah. And they didn't get all they got back from those departures were
2 seconds.
2 seconds for DeAndre Ayton. Yeah. And that's the part of this whole plan that I didn't enjoy thinking about. And then we have finally arrived here and it's like, all right, yeah, you just lost Rui Hachimura, who is going to start for a playoff contender next year. You just lost Marcus Smart, who just started for you in a playoff series that you won for nothing. You lost Luke Kennard at a really reasonable number for nothing after you gave away a second to be able to sign him. And you're losing LeBron freaking James, who we're going to talk about here in a second, for nothing. And whatever team that he goes to immediately has a better chance at winning a championship next year than they have right now without him. So, like, I never loved this plan, and I thought that one of the significant parts of this plan that I think the Lakers didn't quite take as seriously as they needed to was just how damaging it is to say goodbye to useful players and not get anything in return. Like they don't have any first rounders in their back pocket. They have 3 second rounders and a pick swap, and all that after you just said goodbye to an entire starting five of a team that won a playoff series last year.
But let me push back on that a little bit, because it's not for nothing in return. You lost them for the cap space to go and make the other moves that you made. And, you know, you and I did a whole show last week, and you've been talking about, like, it's like the Lakers, did they potentially overpay? Did they give up? Like, I hate to use this word now, but like, did they give up optionality in the future by moving all of those first round picks for Kessler? And did they sort of bid against themselves? And, you know, like, there's reasonably cases to be made for that stuff. But I still think the team next year is going to be a really fucking good, like, basketball team in the regular season. And so they didn't lose guys for nothing. They lost them for the space to bring in these other guys. And it remains to be seen whether or not that was a mistake. But I think, like, framing it as, like, yes, they didn't directly get anything for Luke Kennard. You know, they didn't get an asset back from the Suns, but they did get the cap space and the flexibility in order to go get Walker Kessler, Quentin Grimes, you know, Colin Sexton, and Mamu, who, I've just decided I'm just going to call him Mamu. I'm not.
Because even calling him Sandro doesn't quite. Like, Mamu's
better. No, Mamu's better. Yeah.
Yeah. Dormammu, even.
He's from another dimension to space the floor.
I swear to God, because he played well against the Lakers in both the games that they played against them. And I just, like,
that was an incredible statistical find last week. Was like, what did he average, like 19 points against them or something?
It's like averaging 2.5 threes against the
Rob
Lakers.
Rob was like Googling him during the game. He's like, who is this guy? How do you spell it?
13 million dollars a year for 4 years. Yeah. Let's wrap this, the Kuminga situation, up. Is there a path that you would prefer to continue? Like, would you, like, how important is signing Jonathan Kuminga to you? Aside from the jokes, aside from the bit, because we know that you care.
Yeah, I have to try and, like, take this seriously for a second. I hate how important it is to me right now. Earnestly. You know, like, I don't even think that it's that likely to work out and, like, be, you know, where he's like this perfect, you know, buy-in guy that fits the culture and fits the team perfectly. But he's just, like, so much more talented and athletic than any of the other options available on the market. Like, you have to try it. You have to buy the lottery ticket to win the lottery. And so they, you know, he's by far their best shot. And, you know, as much as, like, it is, like, half a bit that it's like, yeah, you know, I'm all in on Kuminga, whatever. But, like, I am kind of all in on Kuminga.
The Lakers are all in on Kuminga. Like, they have forced us to be all in on Kuminga. I think it's also really important that the Lakers sign him to as little as they possibly can, so that he knows when he shows up, like, dude, this is the direction that your career is going in. You know,
you,
like,
want him sharing the pool house with Bronny in LA rent prices, you know?
Well, I don't think Bronny is going to be around to share said pool house.
can they do, like, a house trade? Like, if Bronny goes,
he's going to be looking for the pool house in,
like,
in
Jonathan Kuminga calls LeBron. He's like, hey, you want to do, like, one of those house swaps, like Josh Hart, Larry Nance Jr. Like, you take my place in Golden State, I'll take yours in LA. And he's like, call Bronny about the pool house.
It would be funny if, because Gabe is saying this, it would be funny if Kuminga is the only player who doesn't get a player option.
That's how we'll know he had no leverage, is if even Rob doesn't give him a player option. But I'm going to tell you right now, the deal will have a player option on it. Rob is going to frame that. It's like, hey, you know, we're giving you the optionality to opt out next year. And, like, if you really prove yourself, test the market and get what you deserve.
Yeah, I think it'll be like a 2-year, $25 million deal. And the second year is going to be like a player option.
Yeah.
Be my guess.
I don't know what I'm willing to bet. I was going to say, like, I would, like, eat paper or something on the stream if he doesn't have a player option, but I got to be able to find a better option than that. I'm like Rob, I'm negotiating against myself. I'm just like, here, I'll do this horrible thing if this thing happens that I don't think will.
I remember eating paper in high school was like a thing in elementary school, and there was this dude who was just churning out, like just going to town on a notebook. He was like a goat. And
you, did you? Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, he was like, and I like looked at him. I was like, why are you doing that? And he's like, I'm hungry. And I'm like, this doesn't provide you. It's like in fourth grade. It's like, I already, I'm pretty sure you're not going to get like any dietary like benefits from this. He goes, no, it's helping. I was like, no, you're getting full. Your stomach is getting full, but you're not, there's no nutrients, man. That's the point. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'll tell you the there's actually quite the opposite. Like, depending on what type of paper you're eating, you know, you think it's like, oh, it's trees, like it's natural, whatever. It's like computer paper, not the case. And so yeah. I'll tell you, like, do not smoke a joint with computer paper. It's not a good idea, and you will not feel good.
All right. No, I want to be clear. I was not eating paper. I was saying,
yeah, Miles is eating paper.
He might eventually. No, he's very picky.
Oh, really? Yeah. I don't know. I just, like, every time I've met him, he's just like charging around, like, you know, to like trying to smash his head through the nearest wall. So I just assumed I gave your son a book as a gift the first time I met him, and he literally took a bite out of it. At the dinner,
he was teething. That's table. Different. That's completely different.
I like Matters. We will. JJ will love Kuminga Built. Like, if you could combine those two guys, that's a max player.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, that was the thing with Rui and Vanderbilt. Was if you combine those two guys, you would get the idealized Jonathan Kuminga. But. All right, let's go ahead and talk about this ESPN story on LeBron. Ramona Shelburne wrote about it, and it was about, like, kind of the run-up to LeBron's eventual departure. The kind of, you know, headline story from it is that the Lakers did not at any point this offseason really fully approach LeBron about, like, you know, what part he would play in these plans. It is so hilarious that they wouldn't do that and then also still have the power forward spot wide open. Like, normally, if you're going to be so petty that you're going to say goodbye to LeBron James before you really even give yourself an option or the opportunity to convince him to stay, normally you do so by replacing him on the roster, and the Lakers have not done that. I talked a lot yesterday, Harrison, and I have talked a lot over the years about how petty I think some of these parties can be with the top of the Lakers organization, most notably Jeannie Buss. And the whole time I'm reading this thing from Ramona, I'm just thinking, like, God, man, like, how are you such a child about this? Like, how are these people such children when it comes to just simple communication with maybe the most important player in your, like this dude rescued the Lakers, right? Like, we could just say it. He rescued the Lakers. He signed with them as a free agent at a time where they were coming off of the worst stretch in their organization's history. They were gambling on Magic Johnson becoming a good front office executive. A gamble, by the way, that didn't pay off because he wasn't. He was terrible, and then he left to tweet. And then on top of that,
by the way, just aside, did you see that he tweeted, like, when I signed LeBron all of these years ago, like, he tried to jump in on the, like, goodbye to LeBron and, like, you know, like,
yeah.
Hey, by the way, that was me, Magic.
So, like, LeBron, like, the Lakers were fresh off of a coup attempt from one of Jeannie's brothers, no, two of Jeannie's brothers, to try to take the team away from Jeannie. And yet, like, with all of that going on, LeBron decides, I'm going to show up there. He rides out the first season with the young core. You know, despite what we all could have seen, he preferred to trade those guys for win-now talent or win-then talent. Eventually, they did just that, right? And LeBron and Clutch.
I think those guys could see that he wanted to trade them for win now talent.
No, remember, based on
sort of the way the locker room went towards the trade deadline and in the Anthony Davis rumors.
remember it was his like first media day, and he did like a sit down thing with the Spectrum panel there, and Allie Clifton was I think she was just starting with the company. Yeah, then she had just came over.
Yeah.
And so the, you know, LeBron was saying how, like, you know, I'm a pretty patient guy, and Allie literally busted out laughing, like just started laughing at the notion that LeBron would sit there and wait for these kids to develop. But still, like, LeBron shows up when he did and he didn't have to. Then he pulls strings to get Anthony Davis to the Lakers. They win a championship together. One of the most difficult and harrowing championships that any Lakers team has won when you consider everything that went on that season. And then now at the end, you know, you have these, you know, nepo children and cronies, you're just like telling LeBron James, no, we don't want you here. It is like offensive to me that was their approach here with LeBron. And especially when, you know, this idea that they were having these internal dialogues, internal, you know, meetings on how to pitch LeBron James on sticking around after they did all of the work that they needed to do. And the conclusion that they arrived at was, we'll just never talk to him. Maybe it won't come up. It's crazy.
I think my, first of all, the piece is called Inside the Sterile, it's an incredible headline, Inside the Sterile Dissolution of the LeBron Lakers Marriage. And I actually think that Ramona, it's really well written, really well reported.
Yeah.
I thought that Ramona made sort of the perfect analogy in it, that it was like, it was a loveless marriage ending in divorce, basically. It was like two sides that clearly were ready to move on to each other, and they were going to say the right things for the kids. And, you know, they did all their statements all in unison together. And it was like, hey, I loved LA, and we love LeBron, and, you know, we're excited for his next chapter, while having a gigantic hole at power forward. It just show, and like all the reporting that she had on, you know, how little communication there was between the two sides. To me, reading between the lines, it was very obvious that, you know, they didn't want him back. Because if they wanted him back, then like, this is not how you make
that sales pitch. They would have talked to him.
And I don't, For as much as you and I have criticized this Lakers front office, and it's been a lot, I do not think that they are stupid people. Like, Rob Pelinka is like a good politician, and he has a lot of experience with NBA stars. He knew how LeBron was going to react if the Lakers, like,
well, just, and also
basically Kurt never Ramis made him there, feel welcome, but never pitched him, all of that stuff. Like, he knew, like, you just imagine like how any of his superstar clients over his career, like how he would have felt and what the writing on the wall would have been for him if he was in Rich Paul's shoes. And it's like, hey, yeah, they didn't offer the extension, and they don't want to talk about it. And yeah, no, they haven't set up a free agent meeting yet. Oh, they just called me a week before free agency to talk about setting up a video call, maybe. And, you know, it's just like, it's the bare minimum effort to be like, hey, yeah, I'm gonna, like, they were being polite. They weren't going to say, get the fuck out, but they were clearly like trying to make him realize like, hey, we don't want you back, so you should just leave, was to me the way that it, like, reading between the lines, it all came across. And, you know, it's like you mentioned, and like, there's the line in the piece, and something that you and I have been talking about all year, of like, players generally don't like to take a pay cut with the incumbent team. They don't want to take a pay cut for the team that they were just making $50 million for. They want to take the pay cut with another team and make you look stupid for not giving them another amount of money. And it was like, basically, you know, like, how could the Lakers present that to James without him taking it a sign as disrespect? And so Ramona writes, for weeks, they held internal discussions on the matters. But then earlier up in the piece, they say that they just basically never reached out to him. It's like, so you had weeks long deliberations on how to approach him, and you just decide, well, there's no good way to do it. Let's, that's going to be an awkward call. I don't want to do that. And they just waited till the last week. It's just like,
gonna suck.
Yeah.
Just like, picture, it's, did you watch Thrones last night? Did you watch the new episode?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know how it was funny to see like a bit, or like some version of a bit on that show, because it is normally so humorless. But Damon telling Rhaenyra, hey, did you kill that kid yet?
There were a couple of funny moments in that show. Like, that show, when it wants to be funny, is very funny.
Yeah.
There are a couple of, like, funny moments. Like, when, like, Rhaenyra clocking that Alicent did not recognize her son and just being like, wait, that's not your son, is it? And then looking at the blonde hair, really, and, like, looking at the dye job and being like, fuck, I should have thought of this. Like, all these problems would be solved.
Yeah. But no, but, like, that's how I picture, like, Kurt asking Rob if he'd spoken to LeBron about the plan yet. Hey, man, did you call LeBron? No.
That's how Kurt is asking Rob if they traded Bronny yet. Hey, you kill that kid yet?
It's like walking through the team facilities and he sees Bronny. Rob!
Yeah. What is he still doing here? You gotta.
Ronnie's like, I can hear you. But yeah, I don't know, man. I just walk away from this, and we've now seen evidence of this pettiness between Jeannie Buss and Jerry West, and we saw how like poorly they honored Jerry after he literally died. We saw, like, that pettiness, Harrison, I think, also seeped into the relationship that it seeped into the relationship that LeBron and the Lakers had when, like, the Russell Westbrook trade didn't go as they wanted it to go. And they basically just said, well, let's just blame LeBron for it. And hopefully everybody will, like, go along with that. That's why, by the way, like, all of this stuff that is coming out about, you know, the Lakers not talking to LeBron, whether or not you want to believe Ramona or whether you want to believe other reporting on the matter like that, I think the reporting
was contradictory. She said they reached out and he said that he was not available. They reached out a week before free agency.
Yeah.
And by that point, he had realized they don't want him. And so he's like, I'm not going to waste all of our time and take this meeting that's just going to be like all of us just being like, hey, bye.
The point I'm making, though, is that, like, the reason that we have gotten this full court press, like, this is like the third or fourth different story that has indicated that the Lakers hadn't contacted LeBron, or how LeBron had and Clutch had said, all right, fine, I think Ramona literally uses the line in the piece, right? I'm going to break up with you before you break up with me, kind of deal.
Yeah.
You know? Which, you know, all right, this does not matter to me, even a little bit, but as evidenced by the fact that the Lakers had so many moves lined up right after another, that would kind of sort of indicate, like, how that relationship had probably gone. But
they waited a day after the breakup to announce their new girlfriend on Instagram.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. Like, well, I can't do it today. Like, it's like, you know, that's kind of tough. We'll announce in 2 weeks, you know?
And we'll have to make sure that, like, you don't recognize the shirt that we're wearing in the picture or the venue. But yeah, like the thing that, like, it, just in terms of, because I know people are probably listening to this right now, I was like, why does this matter? The Lakers have moved on. LeBron is getting ready to move on. Why does this matter? It matters, in my opinion, because once you show those true colors of pettiness, of just this really immature behavior, whether it was with Jerry West before, whether it is with LeBron James now, like, once you showcase that that is what you're capable of, if I'm Luka Doncic, I'm looking at this saying, like, when's it my turn?
That was exactly the point that I was going to make, is that it's the only concern about this, because, you know, they all kept it relatively amicable. This is not like the ugly, messy divorce that it could have been and probably would have been if it had happened a few years ago, given how bad the blood was at that point. I think there'd sort of been like a reconciliation and, like, you know, everybody had sort of like had like a, you know, mutual respect for the other one, was like, hey, we're just gonna, you know, we're not gonna air shit out about each other, and we're just gonna sort of keep it moving and, you know, align on our best interests.